If anything, Ralph Ballantyne's estimate of the buffalo herds was conservative. Probably never had any large mammal been so prolifically massed upon the earth's surface in all of its history. From the Great Sud, where the infant Nile weaves its way through fathomless swamps of floating papyrus, southwards over the wide savannas of eastern and central Africa, down to the Zambezi, and beyond to the golden glades and forests of Matabeleland, the vast black herds roamed. They were very seldom hunted by the primitive tribes. They were too swift and fierce and powerful for their bows and spears. The digging of a pitfall large and deep enough to trap such an enormous beast was a labour that few of the tribesmen thought about seriously enough to interrupt their dancing and beer-drinking and cattle raidings. The Arab travellers into the interior were not interested in such coarse game. Rather, they were intent on capturing and chaining the tender young black maidens and youths for the markets at Malindi and Zanzibar, or in hunting the wrinkled grey elephant for their curved ivory tusks. Very few European travellers, bearing their sophisticated weapons, had yet ventured into these remote lands, and even the huge prides of lion which followed the herds could not check their natural multiplication. The grasslands were blackened by the huge bovine beasts. Some herds, 20 or 30,000 strong, were so dense that the animals in the rear literally starved, for the pasturage was destroyed by the forerunners before they could reach it. Weakened by their own vast multitudes, they were ripe for the pestilence that came out of the north. It came out of Egypt. It was the same plague that Moses' god Jehovah had inflicted on the Pharaoh of Egypt. It was the peste bovine, the rinderpest, a virus disease which attacks all the ruminants, but of those the most susceptible are the bovines, buffalo and domestic cattle. The stricken animals are blinded and choked by the discharge from the mucous membranes. Mucus pours in thick ropes from their nostrils and jaws. The discharge is highly infectious and contagious, and it persists on the pasturage over which the animal has passed long after its host has perished. The course of the disease is rapid and irreversible. The mucus discharges are swiftly followed by profuse diarrhea and dysentery. With the beasts straining to evacuate, even after their bowels are purged of all but bloody slime. Then, when at last the animal goes down and no longer has the strength to rise, the convulsions twist the horned head back and around until the nose touches the flank. That is the position in which they die. The rinderpest passed with the speed of a gale wind across the continent, so that in places where the concentrations of buffalo were heaviest, a herd of 10,000 great horned animals was wiped out between the dawn and the sunset of a single day. The carcasses lay so thickly on the denuded savannah that they were touching each other like shoals of poisoned sardine washed up on a beach. Over this carnage hung the characteristic fetid odour of the disease, with which soon mingled the stench of putrefaction, for even the teeming flocks of vultures and packs of gluttonous hyena could not devour 1,000th part of this awful windfall. This gale of disease and death blew southwards, swallowing up the blundering, billowing herds. Southwards, until at last it reached the Zambezi. Even that wide stretch of swirling green water could not check the pestilence. It was carried to the far bank in the bulging crops of the vultures and carrion stalks, and was scattered upon the pasture in the feces that they voided in flight. The dreadful gale began again. Southwards it moved, ever southwards. Isasi, the little Zulu driver, was always the first to wake in the laager. It gave him satisfaction to be alert and aware when others half his age still slept. He left his mat and he went to the watchfire. It was nothing but a pile of fluffy white ash, but Isasi moved the blackened tips of the logs together, crushed a few dry leaves of the ilala palm between them, and leaned close to blow upon it. The ash flew away, and a coal glowed sullenly before the palm leaf popped into cheery little flames. The logs took, and Isasi warmed his palms for a moment, and then left the circle of wagons and wandered down to where the oxen were penned. Isasi loved his bullocks as some men love their children or their dogs. He knew each by name. He knew their separate natures, their strengths and their weaknesses. He knew which of them would try to turn out of the span when the going got tough or the footing soft, and he knew those with great hearts and special intelligence. Of course he had his favourites, like the huge red wheeler. He had christened Dark Moon for his huge soft eyes, an ox who had held a loaded 18-footer against the flood of the Shashi when the mud bank was crumbling under his hooves. Or Dutchman, the black and white dappled lead ox that he had trained to come like a dog to his whistle and lead the others to their place in the span. Itzasi chuckled lovingly as he opened the thorn bush gate of the temporary kraal and whistled for Dutchman. In the pre-dawn gloom, a beast coughed, and the sound had a peculiarly harrowing quality that struck a chill into Itzasi's guts. A healthy bullock did not cough that way. He stood in the opening of the kraal, hesitating to go in. Then he smelt something he had never smelled before. Faint though the whiff of it was, it made his gorge rise. It smelled like a beggar's breath or a leper's sores. He had to force himself to go forward against the smell and his own dread. "Dutchman," he called, "where are you, my beauty?" There was the explosive, spluttering sound of a beast racked by dysentery, and Itzatzi ran towards it. Even in the bad light, he recognized the bulky, dappled shape. The bullock was lying down. Itzatzi ran to it. "Up," he called. "Vusa, tandwe! Get up, my darling. For a beast only lies down when it has given up hope." The bullock heaved convulsively, but did not come to its feet. Itzasi dropped to his knees and placed his arm around its neck. The neck was twisted back at an awkward, unnatural angle. The velvety muzzle pressed into the beast's flank. The muscles under the sleek skin were convulsed as rigidly as cast iron. Itzasi ran his hand down the beast's neck, feeling the fierce heat of fever. He touched the cheek, and it was slick and wet. Itzasi lifted his hand to his own nose. It was coated with a thick slime, and the little Zulu gagged at the smell of it. He scrambled to his feet and backed away fearfully until he reached the gate. Then he whirled and ran to the wagons. "Henshaw!" he yelled wildly. "Come quick, little hawk!" "Flame lilies," Ralph Ballantyne growled. His face was congested with black angry blood as he strode through the kraal. The lily was a lovely flower of crimson edged with gold that grew on a bright green bush that tempted any grazing animal that did not know them. "Where are the herd boys? Bring those bloody Majuba here." He stopped beside the twisted carcass of Dark Moon. A trained wheeler like this was worth £50. It was not the only dead ox. 8 others were down and as many were sickening. Itzasi and the other drivers dragged in the herders. They were terrified children. The eldest on the verge of puberty, the youngest 10 years old, their immature groins covered only by a scrap of mucha cloth, their little round buttocks naked. "Don't you know what a flame lily is?" Ralph shouted at them. "It's your job to watch for poisoned plants and keep the oxen off them. I'm going to thrash the skin off your black backsides to teach you."
"We saw no lilies," the eldest boy declared stoutly, and Ralph rounded on him.
"You cocky little bastard!" In Ralph's hand was a shambok of hippo hide. It was almost 5 foot long, thicker than a man's thumb at the butt, and tapering to whipcord at the tip. It had been cured to the lovely amber colour of a meerschaum pipe. "I'll teach you to look to the oxen instead of sleeping under the nearest tree." Ralph swung the lash around the back of the child's legs. It hissed like a puff adder, and the boy screamed at the cut of it. Ralph seized his wrist and held him up for a dozen more strokes across the legs and buttocks. Then he let him go and grabbed the next Mujiba. The child danced to the tune of the shambok, howling at each cut. "All right," Ralph was satisfied at last. "Get the healthy animals into the span." There were only sufficient oxen left to make up 3 teams. Ralph was forced to abandon half of the wagons, with their loads of salted buffalo hides, and they trekked on southwards as the sun came up over the horizon. Within an hour, another ox had fallen in the traces,
with its nose twisted back against its side. They cut it loose and left it lying beside the track. Half a mile further, two more bullocks went down. Then they began dropping so regularly that by noon Ralph was forced to abandon two more wagons, and the last one rolled on with a depleted span dragging it. Long ago, Ralph's rage had given way to bewilderment. It was clear that this was no ordinary case of felt poisoning. None of his drivers had seen anything to equal it, and there was not even a precedent in the whole vast body of African folklore. "It is a tagati," Izasi gave his opinion. He had seemed to shrink with grief for his beloved bullocks, so now he was a mournful little black gnome of a man. "This is a terrible witchcraft." "By God, Harry," Ralph led his new brother-in-law out of earshot of the women, "we'll be lucky to get even the one wagon home. There are a few bad river drifts to cross yet. We'd better ride ahead and try to pick an easier crossing on the Lupani River." The river was only a few miles ahead. They could already make out the dark green of the forest along its course. Ralph and Harry rode side by side, both of them worried and anxious. "Five wagons lying out there," Ralph muttered moodily. "At £300 each, to say nothing of the cattle I've lost." He broke off and sat up very straight in the saddle. They had come out onto another open glade beside the river, and Ralph was staring across it at the three huge dappled giraffe. With the stilt legs of herons and long, graceful necks of swans, they were the strangest looking of all Africa's mammals. Their huge eyes were soft and sorrowful, their heads strangely ugly beautiful, were topped not by true horns, but by outgrowths of bone covered with skin and hair. Their gait had the same deliberate slow motion of a chameleon, and yet a big bull would weigh a ton and stand 18 feet tall. They were mute. No extremity of pain or passion could induce a whisper or sound from their swan-like throats. Their heart was large as a drum, to pump as high as that head, and the arteries of the neck were fitted with valves to prevent the brain exploding under the pressure when the giraffe stooped, splay-legged, to drink. These three animals were moving in single file across the flay. The old stink bull leading them was almost black with age. The cow that followed was splotched with reddish fawn, and the half-grown calf was a lovely soft beige. The calf was dancing. Ralph had never seen anything like it. It was swaying and turning in slow and elegant pirouettes, the neck twisting and untwisting, swinging first to one side, then to the other. Every few paces, the mother turned back anxiously to watch its offspring, and then, torn between duty and maternal love, swung again to follow the old bull. At last, quite slowly, with a kind of weary grace, the calf slumped to the grassy earth and lay in a tangle of long limbs. The mother hovered for a minute or two, and then in the way of the wilderness deserted the weak and went on after her mate. Ralph and Harry rode up, slowly, almost reluctantly, to where the calf lay. Only when they reached it were they aware of the fatal mucus discharge from jaws and nostrils, and the diarrhea painting the dappled hindquarters. They stared at the corpse in disbelief, until suddenly Harry wrinkled his nose and sniffed. "That smell! The same as the oxen!" he started, and suddenly realization dawned upon him. "A murrain," he whispered. "By the sweet name of the Virgin, Harry, it's some kind of plague." "It's wiping out everything, game and oxen." Under his deep tan, Ralph had turned a muddy colour. 200 wagons, Harry," he whispered. "Almost 4,000 bullocks. If this thing goes on spreading, I'm going to lose them all." He reeled in the saddle, so that he had to clutch at the pommel for his balance. "I'll be finished, wiped out, all of it." His voice trembled with self-pity, and then a moment later he shook himself like a wet spaniel, sloughing off despair, and colour rushed back into his darkly handsome face. "No, I'm not," he said fiercely. "I'm not finished yet, not without a fight anyway." And he whirled to face Harry. "You'll have to bring the women back to Bulawayo alone," he ordered. I am taking the four best horses.
Where are you going? Harry asked.
Kimberley.
Well, what for?
But Ralph had pivoted his horse like a polo pony, and was lying along its neck as he raced back towards the single wagon that had just come out of the forest behind them. Even as he reached it, one of the lead oxen collapsed and lay convulsed in the traces.